session number 8905, rule number 2.
You can be in direct contact with me and I'll see that you get it. I mean, it really was a fantastic situation for a young officer to be in. And up the coast, I was communicating personally with generals. I'd go ashore and discuss a situation with a general. And I was only a young lieutenant commander. Can't remember the names of them now, the General Heath, and there was General Muir, people like that, all had direct contact with. And the Admiral was as good as his word. If I ran into any difficulty, he sorted it out for me and saw that I got what I wanted. Well, I think it was I think when Rose and I got permission to do this was on the 17th of December. We were up in Port Swettenham and we were putting in our first commando raid behind the Jap lines on Boxing Day. It was a week later. So all that had to be done, organising up the coast and get the thing going within a week, so I can tell you how things were moving. He got in, Rose went in with his troops, and he waylaid a convoy, blew up one or two Japanese cars, including one which had a Japanese general in, so that was quite a successful one. That was our first one.
Did you come under fire yourself? In your boats, whilst you were conducting
the Cudet, that was the ship that we took up as a base ship. She was bombed very shortly after we got up there. She was bombed and sunk, so we had to transfer to local bungalows. We lived in local bungalows and carried on for a bit. And then, as the Japs came south, we had to move south. We weren't able to stay there very long.
By land? You moved
land and boats. Land or boats, yes.
Can you describe the sinking of the Cudet?
No, I can't. I don't think I was there at the time. But she was just bombed and sank alongside the jetty.
So how long would you have been operating with Rose?
All December and part of January. Later on, the army rather lost their nerve as regards these troops they'd lent to Rose, and they were retreating the whole time under great pressure from the Japanese, and the temptation on the part of the army was to block the Japanese advance with everything they got. And they were even not prepared to let Rose go on hanging on to a couple of platoons. To our mind, of course, it was very stupid because he was doing quite a lot of good. So he was withdrawn with his troops to back up the army who were coming down south ahead of the Japanese. And my job then became rather a case of patrolling the coast more than anything else. But I did have one other... First of all, I came down to Muir and then to Battapa Hat on the way down. And finally, I was back to operating from Singapore. And I had one very exciting thing after that on the coast. I was about to put in a raid behind the Jap lines with a ship and some small boats. And on my way up to put in the raid, I got a signal from the Admiral telling me to abandon the raid and take all available craft and try and evacuate 2,000 troops, British troops, who were cut off behind the Japanese lines as they advanced at this particular spot, Sungai Punggol, which was in the on the edge of the jungle. So I went up there and I managed to find this spot, and I had an ex-China gunboat, China River gunboat, called the Dragonfly, under my orders. She was the largest ship I had, and these various small craft. Well, the Dragonfly had to lie off in deep water, of course. But I went in first with small motor craft to see what I could find in Sungai Punggol. And it was a very winding river, which almost dried out at low tide. And then at high tide, it was just a mass of mud and swamp. One couldn't see the river at all. But I found where the troops were. So what we did was, at low water, when the winding river bed was visible, we stuck in stakes, wooden stakes, to show the boats how to get up this at high water. And we spent 4 nights evacuating these troops in great secrecy. It was within, I should think, certainly within half a mile of the main road, and you could hear the Japanese transport going up and down that road through the jungle. You could hear them through the jungle. So we had to keep absolutely dead quiet. And what we did was to send all the boats away during the daylight, and the troops were told to lie hidden as far as they could under the trees, under the mangrove trees and so on. If an aircraft came over, they even had to turn face downwards so as not to show their faces. And we hid in huts and things. And the boats, the ship and the boats, came back at dusk. And then all the boats came in, small boats came in, and we took them up this winding river to where the troops were and ferried the troops out to the Dragonfly all night. They were only small boats. And it was tremendous. I was going to say fun, because one or two of the boats were rather big. And to get round the bends, the big Chinese boats and things, one had to get in the water and actually steer them, push the bow around the bend. I was up to my neck at times doing this. So it was the most exciting business. And then before daylight, we stopped everything, sent the boats away, and they went down the coast. And everything lay quiet during the daytime until the next night. And we managed to get the whole lot off, 2,000 of them, in 4 nights, without the Japs realizing even that we were there. Well, they could have done, but they didn't, because we were so quiet. And we got them all back to Singapore.
Do you remember whether they were all British troops or not?
British and Australian. I think they were all British and Australian.
Any Indian troops?
I can't be absolutely certain of that, but I don't think they were. I don't think there were any of them Indian.
Do you remember what units the British troops belonged to?
Yes, Norfolk Regiment was one. Not quite sure about Suffolk. Certainly the Norfolk Regiment was one.
What condition did they seem to be in?
Well, they were in a pretty poor way. They'd been fighting hard during this retreat down the peninsula, so one could expect them to be anything but in a pretty exhausted condition. But they were very good in the sense that I had no trouble over discipline. They had officers with them, of course, but when they were told they got to do this, they got to do that, well, they did it. without any question, and of course they realized their lives depended on it.
Were many of them wounded?
I have no recollection of any wounded.
Did they have arms with them?
Oh, yes.
What was their mental condition? Were they demoralized or not?
I don't think I would have said they were demoralized, no. They were just... I think the word I used was best, exhausted.
You said that you yourself and the others were going into the water to push the boat. Did you have any problems with leeches or other forms of animal life?
No. No.
Was it a mosquito-ridden area?
Well, it was mangrove swamps. I expect we were pestered by mosquitoes, but I can't really remember that because the situation was a very tense one. And one would rather have sort of brushed aside mosquitoes. See, it was a very dangerous situation indeed. As I say, they would hear the Japs within half a mile, so one had to keep absolutely quiet. If the Japs had appeared on the scene, there was nothing we could have done. We would have been either slaughtered or taken prisoner.
So the Japanese weren't sending patrols out on the sides of the roads?
No, not in our direction anyway. And I can remember going back to Singapore that final morning, and I went on board HMS Sultan, which was sort of base ship in Singapore, and I can remember sitting down and having bacon and eggs, and I've never enjoyed breakfast so much in all my life.
Were you short of food aboard the Dragonfly?
I wasn't on the Dragonfly. She was under my orders. I was on one of the... I think I went up on one of the Fairmile motor launches. But other than that, I was ashore the whole time in the mangrove swamps in a hut, or else I was wading to and fro up and down the river helping these boats get in and out.
What is a Fairmile motor launch?
Fairmile is a 100-foot motor launch. Lightly armed motor launch.
And is Fairmile the manufacturer's name?
I don't know about that.
What happened to you after you'd successfully pulled off the evacuation?
The Japs were getting pretty close to Singapore then, and I had no further chance of operating like this, so I was attached to Australian Advanced Headquarters on Singapore Island.
What happened there?
Well, the only thing I can remember was certainly rather exciting, and that was that I was just outside their headquarters one day when an air raid took place. I saw the bombs coming down. It looked horribly menacing, and I threw myself on the ground. There was a loud explosion just close to me, and a lot of blast and dirt thrown about. And I was lying on my face. I put my hand out like that into the bomb hole. My hats had been blown off and my shirt was ripped down the side. I was very lucky. There were some Malays who were a little further away than I was who were killed. So I imagine it was a mushroom blast and I was under the umbrella effect of the mushroom. That's the narrowest escape I've ever had, I think. And I've got a slightly damaged eardrum as in consequence.
So after the... how long were you with the Australian Advanced Headquarters?
Oh, a very short time, only a matter of days.
What were you supposed to be doing with them?
I was a sort of naval liaison officer, really. But say what, exactly what my duties were, I really couldn't say. I mean, that sounds rather stupid, that, but... there was precious little one could do at that stage. Everybody was retreating onto the island or on the island, and it was just a case of siege now and waiting for the last blow. The last job I had in Singapore was a futile effort, really, to collect all the sampans one could to get people away from Singapore, but it soon became obvious that was quite hopeless. And I was in Singapore when it was a mass of flames and smoke. I was there until Singapore surrendered, I think, on a Sunday. I was there till the Friday. And I was in the last boat to leave, except one, which carried the Admiral. And my orders were to go in this, it was a 72-foot little motor gunboat commanded by a young Australian reserve officer. And my orders were to take 60 key army personnel to Java, where it was imagined the fight could go on. And it was on that passage that my second sinking took place.
What was the name of the boat?
Oh, it was just... It had a number, and I can't remember what it was. ML something or other. I don't know.
And what kind of size and facilities did it have?
72 foot. It had one little, what I call a pop gun on the forecastle. I think it was a 3-pounder. I don't know, it must have been more than a 3-pounder. Perhaps a 10-pounder. Anyway, one very small gun on the forecastle. And as far as I can remember, all it had apart from that was a couple of twin Lewis guns. The personnel I took on board were people like key ordnance people and Royal Engineers and people like that, a certain number of whom had rifles with them. Otherwise, they were technicians, army technicians.
Of what kind of rank were they?
Mostly ratings. There was certainly one colonel there. I don't remember exactly what. One didn't really worry about that. You just had a posse of men given to you and told take them to Java, and didn't worry much about what they were. It was a terrific crush, of course. Only a very small craft. It was absolutely packed. A lot of them were on the upper deck the whole time, sleeping on the upper deck.
Can you describe the sinking in detail?
Yes, well, a certain amount of detail, yes. I think we hid up quite a bit during the daylight under trees, and we had certain camouflage material, netting and so on, put over the boat. And on about the third day out... we'd been motoring during the night, and we went automatically, as all ships do in wartime, we went to action stations at dawn, as it was beginning to get light, but not expecting anything. And the signalman reported a ship ahead of us in the dusk. Well, it can't have been more than... probably a mile. And he reported that it was a warship. Well, we assumed that it was a Dutchman, because that was Dutch territory, you see. No idea that the Japs had got down as far as that. So it was a Dutchman. And then, to our horror, he said he saw the poached egg flying. You know what I mean by the poached egg?
Yes.
That Japanese flag. And we were getting closer then. Then the ship was stern onto us. Well, it turned to port, and as it turned to port, we saw that very distinctive curved bow that the Japs have. So we realized, I mean, of course, already knew it was poached egg, it was a Jap, but when we saw that, we realized without any question at all, it was a Japanese ship and a big one. It was a destroyer. It was a pretty modern destroyer, I think. And they'd obviously sighted us too. Well, we were probably within perhaps three quarters of a mile by then, and our top speed was 18 knots. We had, as I say, nothing except a pop gun, a couple of Lewis guns, and a few rifles on board. And here was a ship capable of about 35 knots with big guns on board, probably 4.5-inch guns. And so one sort of had to think very, very quickly. It was quite hopeless trying to run away. I mean, you couldn't. It was like a mouse running into a cat. So I got all the men with rifles, to get their rifles loaded, and said, right, everybody shoot at the bridge when we get close enough. We went on to full speed, and the ships, we'll say the ship Jap's coming out like this now, more or less towards us. We were going like that.
Parallel to it.
We were going on a parallel opposite course like that. And I gave them orders. Incidentally, the young Australian officer asked me to take over, because I was a regular officer and he wasn't. And he went down and took the wheel in the wheelhouse. And everybody had orders to fire at the Japanese bridge, because we were told that in Japanese ships there was a tremendous concentration of officers on the bridge. So all the rifles and the Lewis guns and the little pop gun were told they were to fire at the bridge. Well, the Japs, I really can't tell you now what we managed to get off, but it wasn't very much. And the Japs opened fire with their big guns, shrapnel. And after the first round, with absolutely point-blank range, of course, we were pretty well done for. I looked down and I saw the forecastle gun had been knocked off its mounting, was pointing up like that, out of action. There was a fire in the engine room. There was a fire in the forecastle. The steering wheel, the young lieutenant in the wheelhouse had been killed. The steering wheel was jammed starboard, and we were starting to just turn around in a circle. And there was just absolutely nothing we could do. The action, I think, lasted about 9 minutes, and it was a most shocking mess. The upper deck was an absolute charnel house. I stopped engines. I mean, they'd have stopped automatically if I hadn't done. And the Japs, when they saw that we'd stopped and could do nothing, well, then they stopped shooting at us. They didn't shoot us very much, because the first round or two made such a mess of things anyway. And we were slowly sinking. So we got the survivors. Those who were in a swimmable condition were told to swim if they could, find the mangrove swamps and swim ashore if they could. A certain amount of the wounded we managed to lash to wooden planks and things, in the hope that they would survive. And the upper deck really was absolutely ghastly. How to describe what a mess it was for men lying on their backs, dead, with their backbone showing, their stomachs completely shot away, and blood all over the place. a horrible, horrible mess. And eventually, she went down. Ensign still flying, I'm glad to say.